Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, let's spend a few minutes still at Michel Gérard, because what I did not ask you is about favorite plates, favorite dishes that you had when you were there most recently.
My first course was a torchon of foie gras, and it was smoked. And I have never had something like that executed so impeccably and perfectly. Because when you make, this is cold foie gras, and foie gras is almost all fat. So when you start to think about the smoking process and how that might affect food, it's sort of...
It's got to be really delicately and precisely
exactly.
done.
Exactly. It's quite a challenge to smoke something like that. So it was the torchon, which was amazing, and had this just light tone of smoke, and it was smoked over his wood fire. He has an old wood fire in his kitchen that he roasts rotisseries things and grills things in, and obviously smokes things in. And it had three gelées for accompaniment. One was a mushroom gelée, the other was a duck stock gelée, and the other was an apple gelée, and they were just absolutely gorgeous. So you had this little, you know, pectiny jelly stuff on the plate that just was like gorgeous between the bites of the foie gras. And then he made a squab chausson, which is pastry wrapped around basically ground meat and other things. And oh my gosh, that was I can taste it now. The flavors in that chausson were
so that was warm,
brilliant.
And the torchon was cold.
Exactly. And to have the hot and the cold on the plate. And to top it off, to make this chef and eater as happy as possible, were two very thin slices of amazing bread that were filled with slices of black truffle and butter. And these things on the plate.
Sounds brutal.
It was amazing. It was absolutely gorgeous. I had to take 800 pictures of it. I was so happy. And I have to say, you know, dining by myself, it is an experience to go on a trip like this by myself. For me as an artist and as a chef, it is unbelievably inspiring, and it is time to be contemplative, and it is time to think about all the things that I could do better, or all the things that I want to do, or all the things that I'm experiencing that inspire me. And that includes the beauty of the tabletop, or the beauty of the room, or the beauty of the outdoors of that place, which it is unbelievably beautiful. And to have this opportunity to do that for me is so inspirational. And, you know, I'm really thankful for these opportunities. And I got to meet the chef. And I think something else that should be mentioned about him is he was a part of the Nouvelle Cuisine movement. And, you know, he's a contemporary of Paul Bocuse, Alain Chapelle, Jacques Pic, Jean and Pierre Troicot, and Roger Verger. And, you know, those guys all talked to each other. They all worked in each other's kitchens. They all collaborated. And what a strength that is. Those are some of the best chefs that have ever lived. And for them to be able to kind of commune and to celebrate and share is amazing to me.
I think you may be one of the most clever of that lot.
He is very clever, and clever in a good way.
Is there another dish that you thought was a remarkable dish when you were there?
I had it was a whole deboned chicken from that region, and it was stuffed with foie gras and herbs, and it's roasted in the embers of the fire in his fireplace, and it comes out as a whole chicken. It's in a large copper pan on a grate, and underneath the grate, the chicken sits on the grate. Underneath the grate are still the embers from that fire. I've never seen anyone do that, bring that out into the dining room. It was beautiful, and it smelled so good, and it tasted great. They actually take it back to the kitchen. They don't plate at tableside, which they do with some of their food. And it was plated in the kitchen and had beautiful accompaniments. But that chicken was, you know, it's a little bit like eating at Georges Blanc and having the chickens from Bresse, which is the famous region for chicken in France. It was absolutely, I mean, you just think about the everyday chicken, and then you eat a chicken like this, and it's so amazing. You know, it's an amazing experience, and it shows you what you can do with food and how brilliant you can make it if you start off with a great product.
Well, and it doesn't have to be. I mean, the dish was stuffed with foie gras, but I'm certain that if it was not stuffed with foie gras, if it was stuffed with cornbread, if it was
sure.
stuffed with really beautiful little
vegetables,
you know, turnips
or
that it could have been fantastic.
Absolutely.
Because it's honest cooking and honest product and honest method,
mm-hmm.
and well-seasoned and thoughtful
and cared for.
Yeah, what the French, what French chefs, what always would call soigner.
Yeah, right.
You know, you care for it. You're touching it. You're
Well, it's like when they were talking about, I asked the waiter to go back to the kitchen and ask the chef how the torchon was prepared. And she said, well, the chef says he starts with the duck. It comes in and it is still warm. So then they take the liver and it immediately becomes, they start to move it towards making the torchon. I'm like, oh my God, we don't have that opportunity here.
People don't show up with whole ducks with their foie gras our back door
They don't ever, never, ever. So, you know, it's just,
that's
another reason why the food is so brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why for, 20 years we worked so hard to get people to grow things for us and to do things
Luckily.
For us. It's an interesting, that connection between the farmers and the chef. I think you only see that, you see that in France and you see that in Italy. I don't know that many other places. And some in Middle Europe, you see it. But now, then you ate in one of his casual restaurants there also as well that you really liked?
La Ferme aux Grives, and it is a old farm from the 17th century, and it is the workmanship in that area is, I don't understand how they make their buildings, but I'm sorry to say it this way, but it looks like plaster with stone stuck in it. And the buildings are absolutely beautiful. And with, obviously, it's all local stone. And it's just little
stones.
Yeah,
sort of a Vasquez method. It's sort of an adaptation of stucco.
Okay. Well, this building is made that way. And then, you go in. It was a beautiful evening. The weather could not have been more perfect that entire trip. That was an amazing experience. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's a gorgeous night. I'm going to sit outside here in this beautiful, outdoor area and, on the farm. And then I thought, well, I better walk inside. And I walked inside. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm sitting outside as much as I'd love to, because the interior of this building was so beautiful. Everything, they have the most amazing artwork in there, all of their spaces, and these old paintings and old furniture, and it's just super rustic, and the bar is amazing, and everything's super cozy, and great sofas, and it's rich and well lit, and just there's vegetables everywhere and flowers. I mean, it couldn't have been more beautiful. And then you walk into the restaurant part, and there's this old butcher block table that has to be hundreds of years old. It's made out of wood. It was so used, it just greatly dipped down in the center from all the years of the guys butchering on there. It was full of vegetables. And behind that was this gigantic old fireplace that they spit roast a suckling pig in. So there's a pig roasting, and then they have this kind of amazing old grill that actually I think holds some form of charcoal and wood. And they're grilling in there inside the wood fireplace. But the display in front where the chef, who was a woman, which was awesome, was working on in front of this suckling pig and doing, she was doing a lot of prep work and also doing her, she plated all the suckling pig courses, and you get to watch her work. The main kitchen is off to the left and looks super, really modern and really gorgeous and quite the opposite. But and a lot of guys were working back there. But it was just an amazing experience to see this gorgeous old world display and see it being used and feel like I felt like I was in an old oil painting. And the painting above the fireplace, the fresco, was just absolutely amazing. So all the doors are open to the outside. It couldn't have been more fresh and beautiful in there. But the suckling pig was one of the best things I've ever eaten. And it was all caramelized on the outside. And there was a stuffing on the plate. And I think I think that they utilized the drippings from the pan underneath the pig and made a stuffing with it, a breading with it, basically. And it just sat a little bit of it on the plate. It was super intense in flavor, but it was amazing. And it was a great idea to utilize those drippings that way. And there were a couple of other things. And they did serve the pig with potato puree, which was over the top and absolutely delicious. And I started off with a little bit of sort of like a rosette de Lyon, some sort of cured sausage and gougère that were absolute perfection, and house-smoked salmon, which was gorgeous. And then I had tête de veau, which was the best tête de veau, which is head of veal, a very complicated sort of almost like a terrine or ballantine make.
Pretty crazy piece of charcuterie that it scares a lot of people because there's a lot of gelatin and a lot of fat.
This was so good.
And the meat as well. And it's a matter of, you have to choose the right one to balance it.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make sure you have enough of the meat from the neck for it to have really good flavor. And if you're patient, if you cook it and you cool it in the stock you cook it in, then it's, the flavor's going to set nicely. But you said unusually this was served warm,
It
right?
was warm. And they were just these gorgeous, thin, perfect slices. There were like six slices on the plate. It was warm with sauce ravigote and and a little salad in the center. It was just, it really truly was remarkable. And to sit in that setting and to have this amazing meal and to watch someone cook in this old world way was really, really a brilliant experience. So I really enjoyed that greatly.
And so tell me, when we'd started the program talking about different heroes. So Michel Gerard, contrast his work and his style, whether it's fancy or casual, with some of the other heroes that you've had historically in different parts of French cooking, like, say, Georges Blanc or Paul Bocuse, or you've had a chance to visit over 20 years a bunch of these different restaurants. And when someone has a 3-star, usually it's a fully evolved, like an aesthetic and a service style and a place and, an environment in the cellar and, what their priorities are is very clear.
Well, I think, one of the big differences between, say, Michel Gerard and Georges Blanc is he's on the other side of the country. And, it's his regional specialties that he's going to prepare, just as Paul Bocuse up in Lyon is going to... Is that up? Yes. Up.
Yeah. Well, Lyon's...
From Brest. Or over.
South of Brest.
South of Brest.
They're relatively... They're relatively in the same general area of France. It's funny. I was struck with Georges Blanc and going to Michel Gerard. When you talk about the having more outpost in the area, Georges Blanc not only has the restaurant Georges Blanc and the hotel, but he has like a million little shops and things
that
celebrate food of the region and the specialties of the region and that sort of thing.
They both have kind of, where Michel Gerard is, it's a very, very tiny town. I mean, there's like 3 shops. And so he has 3 restaurants there. And Georges Blanc also has many restaurants. So his village is a little bit bigger, but yeah, he has
a lot
of control.
More traffic.
he has a lot more traffic and a lot more control over that village. But I think with Georges Blanc, his food to me, again, to have the frog's legs that his family is so famous for, again, that's a product of the region. After all, his restaurant is along a creek and in the middle of beautiful farmland. And, I think that his food is very fresh and but even a little bit more classically done to me, maybe a little bit more close to classic French cuisine, whereas I think Michel Gerard is really trying to more modernize his cooking. And
he's more playful and he's a little more clever maybe than Georges Blanc.
They're all the great chefs in that country, so it's hard for me. I mean, to me, there's nothing negative to be said about any of them. They're all brilliant chefs. But for Georges Blanc, I think, and the other great thing is for me, especially as a chef, to see the gueridon, the old service pieces in the dining room that are made out of solid silver that are, they're probably 50 or maybe 100 years old, to see the beautiful silver on the table, to see the beautiful glassware. I mean, we've always strived for that at Charleston, but you can only afford to do so much.
Well, that's,
and these guys
have
had these for years
and years. Our culture is not a culture
of
celebrating that the same way. I mean,
right.
Imagine a small town in the U.S. that is completely dominated by one chef who's been famous for 20 or 30 or 40 years. It would be a crazy...
Yeah, that would be...
They're little bits and pieces of that, in a few small places in the U.S. that are really kind of travel destinations, and you have a chef has become very famous, and they have a few different little things going on, but it's not... it's not like everyone driving to this town is driving there because of this one person's work.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had that here. that would be great. But with Paul Bocuse, he's the older of all the chefs. And I think he is really...
I think he's 92 now,
he's probably almost 10 years older than the other gentleman. His food is really steeped in that rich cooking of the 50s and 60s, and he moves forward, but very, very slowly from that time. And I think, again, what they all have in common is that they all get this great product from around them. And so I really think, honestly, in the end, it feels to me somewhat the difference between those chefs that are in those regional areas that are rural areas or close to rural areas. It is that their product is what has defined them and their food. As well as, of course, their attitude towards nouvelle cooking and lightening things from the classic cooking days.
It's funny. You could tell at Bocuse. Bocuse is much more enthusiastic. The dishes that came that were like, this is this is the dish we're celebrating. It's from, you know, 1928 or whatever.
Right.
And I really don't care. We're just going to do it beautifully.
Yeah.
That stuff was ridiculous.
Oh,
the quality of that stuff in execution was ridiculous. And it was, you know, the chicken roasted in the pig's bladder. That's, you know, that's stuff with crazy stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that the dishes that were meant to be somewhat updated struck me as the very best food of 1978.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
It wasn't that it wasn't excellent, but there was a little time capsule thing in because the man is 92 years old now, he has enough range that he just sort of did that. And because he's 92 years old, I don't think he really cares.
Why should he? He shouldn't.
You're not judging it. He has the capacity to do food from, you know, six decades with great facilities.
That's amazing to say.
To have some of those things all on the same menu that you can choose from is amazing.
You went there a year before I did, and he was there.
Yeah.
So he was probably, what, 89 then?
I think so.
I mean,
or he just celebrated his 90th
birthday.
His
chef, it's like Michel Gerard. He's walking through the dining room. He has his chef uniform on. He's in his 80s. He was in his kitchen moments before he walked through the dining room.
When I walked in there, he was in the kitchen.
And still cooks.
And very quietly giving the business to his butcher.
It's an amazing thing. Well, and then when you start talking about the chefs in Paris, I think this is where a difference also comes in because they're catering to a different clientele. But I want to say one thing about Bocuse. Bocuse has a twinkle in his eye, and it is indeed, in the end, the personality of all of us that transmits into our food. We can't help it. We're people. So his love of life, his twinkle in his eye translates in his food,
as well as
the fact that he's unbelievably serious about what he does and unbelievably gifted, just as they all are. But I think Guy Savoy has that same sort of twinkle in his eye.
The first three gentlemen that we named are all people that you can tell that because it's purely destination that you're there.
That's right.
They know that part of their responsibility is to entertain their guests. And you feel that, and that comes across throughout the entire place. The thing in Paris is exciting because it's Paris, and Paris is much more of an international crowd for certain. You will see, you know, other tourists and whatnot in these other restaurants, but in Paris you see everyone in these restaurants,
right,
like Guy Savoy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is clearly focused and wants to entertain his guests, but it is genuinely a different, and it has to be a different sort of reception from welcoming essentially old friends, new friends to your country house, you know, which these are essentially very fancy country houses where the other restaurants are. When you're in Paris, that has to change by necessity. And there's also, just like if you're going to New York, the warmest person in New York is still probably a New Yorker, right?
Right.
So in Paris, the Parisians, there's a certain amount of like, you need to impress me a little bit. And I think that sometimes it's such a busy, big city, regardless of how beautiful it is. I think sometimes as Americans, we get a little bit intimidated by that, you know, that sort of like the sheen is there, but there's also a little bit of pressure that comes with that.
Well, and also when you're walking down a street and you see women in 4-inch high heels and dressed to the nines and, you know, perfect hair and perfect makeup and gentlemen dressed the same, you know, beautifully as well. I mean, there is a pressure to look a certain way when you're there and to act a certain way and all those things. And I don't let that affect me in any way. I mean, I'm the first one to wear my cowboy boots in Paris.
That's a few neighborhoods. That's a few.
But there is.
I mean,
like you say, you're in a big city like New York. So it's the same thing. You know, you there is a certain thing going on. But when you go to Guy Savoy, he is at the front door welcoming you. So not to argue with what you were just saying, but he is actually very welcoming.
No.
He is very sweet and genuine when you walk in. Absolutely.
You're not arguing with me. I think that you're saying that this is unusual for the circumstance.
And he is, you know, when I got there, I think they start the reservations at 7:30. So I was there at 7:30 and I was waiting for a guest, and I realized that he was still at the front door, so I got up from my table and I asked Chef if I could see his kitchen. I've eaten there many, many times, and I've never seen the kitchen. So he is such a generous and wonderful man. He was, yeah, come on, and he speaks perfect English. Yeah, come on, come back. And I've met him many times, but nevertheless, super generous, and I got to see his kitchen, which was amazing. I met his chef de cuisine and his sous, and got a picture with him. And, I mean, just I just love the generosity that these guys have. And, you know, he's such an established, amazing chef. And he, you know, Bocuse and Guy Savoy and Michel Gérard all have these this one dish that they have on their menus that they, you know, the one from Bocuse is the one that he did for the French president, and I think it was 1972. And then Michel Gérard has the one he does, which is morels and asparagus in this cream with a ravioli that's just unbelievable. And Guy Savoy has his, which is the artichoke with the artichoke soup with the truffle, which the moment I had that the first time I came back here and made it, my version, but I have been making it since then. I think that's been 10, 12 years ago.
The version's really good.
Thank you. And I love that soup. And that soup was completely inspired by him. And, you know, I had beautiful food when I was there. And I'm just, you know, again, it's just one more step for me in my advancement as a chef to get to be able to eat their food.
And so why don't we, on the next segment, Cindy, let's talk about Paris, but maybe a little bit less pressure in Paris.
Okay, sounds good. There's
a little more casual places when we come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine. Mm-hmm.